Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
So we'd a win for Ireland in the Six Nations, but the prospect of facing a confident England next Saturday, a win too for Ireland's women in hockey and a win also for Man United. Let's take a look back at the weekend sport. I'm joined by Lindsay Peat, Ireland Rugby International, and Ciarán Murphy of the Second Captains. Good morning to you both. Thanks for joining us this morning. Lindsay, the rugby, how did you feel about it? It was a win, but a bit of a weird one, would you say?
A mixed bag of emotions now, Claire, after the win. Obviously, welcomed win away to Scotland. We haven't lost them since 2017. We're second in the table, albeit with Scotland and France still having a game in hand. But look, Johnny Sexton's coolly slotted penalty at the end got us the win. But, you know, there's still areas of concern, to be honest, like 22 missed tackles. The line out worked exceptionally well, especially in defence. I think we disrupted or stole 6 out of 8 of Scotland's line out, but our own functioned very well under Rob Herring, and then still a little bit of inconsistency when Ronan Kelleher came on. But the missed tackles would be something of concern, and we can't really afford that many against England now this coming weekend. We'll be destroyed.
We'll be destroyed, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, Ciarán, to bring you in, Ciarán, on this, I read somewhere, and I think that it's coming through in a lot of the analysis afterwards, that Johnny Sexton's kick at the end and some of the great play that we saw just papered over the cracks. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's been a lot of people's reaction. You know, like that was a brilliant clutch moment by Johnny Sexton to win that game. You know, possibly the most memorable thing about the game was the fact that we have yet again Sexton stepping forward and doing what he does best at a time when his country needed him. And the fact that he's gone the full 80 minutes for the last two games, that's great news for him personally and for Ireland. But, I mean, he's 36 in July and still he's, you know, the fulcrum around which this whole team runs. You know, so much still depends on keeping Johnny Sexton fit, and that's tough. You know, it's really, really tough at the best of times when he's had the amount of injuries that he's had over the last number of years. It just gets more and more difficult. And Andy Farrell has problems. You know, the game is moving on, and, you know, it's not just in the Southern Hemisphere. I mean, there's an excellent chance that England and France will be two of the three best teams in the world ahead of the World Cup in 2023. They produced, you know, an absolutely amazing game on Saturday. They obviously have much higher playing numbers than us, more clubs. But, you know, we've been beating England and France for much of the last decade.
Yeah.
And judging by this weekend, they're playing a different sport than us. And that's kind of tough for Irish rugby fans to take, I think. Because, you know, under Joe Smith and with our provinces, we've always kind of prided ourselves on being smarter than the big clubs in Europe and smarter than England and smarter than France and playing to our strengths. And now it seems like, you know, England and France, as well as having the advantage physically, having the advantage just in sheer numbers, they're also smarter than us. They're also better coached. And, you know, that leaves Ireland in a pretty tough position when, you know, we're not out-coaching these teams anymore. That's a big problem.
Yeah, on the positive side, Lindsay, could you see the influence of Paul O'Connell on the line-out?
I did. Just to extend on Ciarán's point there, I would agree with him. I think if we were to call anything Ireland anything at the minute, I think we're predictable, especially in open phase play. Other than Johnny Sexton's crossfield kick, there was nothing really. If we watch France and England with, you know, putting back inside, the line out that led to Penno's try was absolutely sublime. Like the overthrow to cut out the whole Fiku coming in, making the English defence really have to cut in and make a decision, and then the gap out wide. It was sublime. It was so unpredictable. That particular game was sublime. But to build on the positives, like you said, Claire, I think the influence of Paul O'Connell. Now, obviously, Simon Easterby, he's very much open, as is Farrell, sort of say that he has built on the good work of Simon Easterby, who was the forwards coach before he took over as defensive coach. But the fact that we've now, obviously, we would have lost P. Romani as a huge defensive option in the line-out. Now James Ryan has stepped up. And to an international test level to disrupt or steal 6 out of Scotland's 8 lineouts was sublime, and it was something that was a huge positive. And I think 81%, he wouldn't be too impressed, obviously, with his standards that he employs himself. But it's definitely it was a huge standout moment and something of, you know.
And Lindsay.
Sorry, thank you.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, is a point that's worth making here is the difference that Paul O'Connell has made in, you know, in whatever it is, 2 or 3 months as being as part of the of this management team, which suggests that, you know, and we're obviously talking here about Ireland playing, you know, adopting a different style of play and adopting a different, more sort of heads up rugby type of approach. And it doesn't take 2 years for this to bed in, Lindsay. You know what I mean? Like, Paul has had a couple of months, 8-10 weeks. And he's reinvigorated our lineup completely. A lot different on roll ball. And like, that's it. Like, that's the difference, you know, a truly revolutionary coach can have. It doesn't take 2 years to change. It can actually just be, you know, not quite a flick of a switch, but things can happen a lot quicker than maybe people on the outside think.
No, and this is the thing, speaking now with my player's cap on, it's about, like, it can, I think there was the, you know, reading, you know, some feedback and articles over the weekend was about empowering the players, and obviously Paul coming in, and if he's obviously instilled that belief and empowering the players into making those decisions, at the end of the day, Andy Farrell's not on the pitch, nor will Paul O'Connell. So to instill our players with confidence and belief and to be able to read what the opposition is doing and make decisions based off that is huge. Because again, it's now making decisions what the defence gives us and negating that, you know.
Lindsay, I just want to get a quick take from you on the hockey, because Ireland had a great win against GB over the weekend. Scores for Chloe Watkins and Roisin Upton. Now they're playing again tomorrow, but all of this gives them a great boost ahead of the Olympics, doesn't it?
Oh, listen, Claire, firstly, huge congratulations to the girls, you know, sitting here ourselves as, you know, one of the players who've been we've been training away, which is obviously a huge plus, but to be able to see the girls back in action on a plane is fantastic. And against the defending Olympic champions, like to get that hit out against such calibre of opposition is second to none. So it'll be giving them huge, not only belief in the results and the performance, obviously they were under the caution, under the pressure in the first half from GB, but to come away with that result to level the series, to bring it all to the third game now on Tuesday is huge. So congratulations to them and best luck for Tuesday.
And the best of luck. And Man United beat West Ham yesterday. That's all grand. Kieran, talk to me about Arsenal. What's happened to their captain?
Yeah. So Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has been Arsenal's best player for the last 2 or 3 years. And it was only this week that his coach, Mikel Arteta, was talking in the press about just how positive he was about the team bond, the unity in the camp, the professionalism and the eagerness to learn and to be a part of the Arsenal dream that he sees when he walks into the Arsenal dressing room every day. And then Sunday comes, maybe the most important game of Arsenal season, the North London Derby against their hated rivals, Tottenham Hotspur, and their captain turns up late. Apparently there was some traffic in North London that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang couldn't avoid. I mean, I don't know if you've ever used the traffic excuse. Bosses tend not to really be all that receptive to someone saying that there's traffic on the route that you travel every single day.
Well, I wonder how late he was. Morning. How late was he?
Well, I mean, I think we're talking about 3 or 4 minutes. But when it comes to high-class sports, Claire, I mean, if you're going to be 2 or 3 minutes late, you might as well just miss the entire meeting.
Right.
Because the statement has been made that you had more important, your bagels were toasted just right, but unfortunately, you didn't take into account the feelings of your manager and your teammates, which is the big problem.
Okay, what do you think of that decision, Lindsay?
Well, look, I think we were late once for an All-Ireland final in 2010. Our bus never showed up, which was a good excuse for us. But look, it's not... It just wouldn't happen, you know, when you're a professional athlete and you're captain of the team and it's the biggest game of the season. And the North London Derby is one of the biggest games in the calendar for these two clubs. It doesn't look very good on Aubameyang, or especially now Arsenal, when they've come through this purple patch and they're now back to winning ways and actually playing very well. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to take any chances putting a dent in. So,
yeah, I just wonder though, no, cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, they won the game there, so he's been proven right.
Like, yeah.
It's harsh. The Players' Championship, Kieran, quick mention for Shane Lowry. He came eighth.
Yeah, and it was, you know, some real drama in that as well. And it's always a lot of fun as a golf tournament to watch the 17th hole, one of the most famous holes in golf. Basically, it's an all-island. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Claire, but basically you're hitting all over water. There's water on all four sides. So it's nightmare stuff for your average club golfer. But Shane played brilliantly actually all weekend, other than Friday. He had a great first round on Thursday, had a really strong weekend. Joint eighth earns him, I think, $390,000 ton of Ryder Cup points. It's not a bad way to spend 4 days, Claire. Mm-hmm. He's pretty happy with that, I think. But it's much needed kind of return to form for him. The Masters is coming up, obviously. That's a huge event for him. And he can go into that and face into that now with a right bit of confidence on the back of a really good weekend performance.
The best of good luck to him. That's Shane Lowry coming eighth in the Players' Championship last night. Lindsay Peake, Ciarán Murphy, thank you both very much indeed.
Thanks,